Good morning. This is Dan, and it is February the 21st, 2019. I'm about an hour away from a job interview with a team of interviewers. A team of interviewers. I'll read the names to you. I will be interviewed by, Kazi Pulsaluri, Arathi Nandakumar, Naveen K, thank you for just saying K, Naveen. Rishi Sani, Rajdeep Das, Mahesh Dev, and Tony Impio. And the last one sounds almost like they might have been born here. And you can say, well, Dan, you're being awfully racist, aren't you? I just don't give a fuck. It isn't about racism. I have a brother-in-law who's from India, and he's a really decent guy. So it's nothing to do with being Indian. I just don't really care. But the idea that this interview is going to be a kind of firing squad from people that, in all likelihood, will barely speak English is depressing. Sorry I'm not all globalist. Sorry I'm not all happy about the H-1B visa farce scam, whatever you want to call it. Sorry I'm not happy about the Screwbalee. Now, here's the thing. I was listening to one of my old podcasts from 2016, and I used the phrase Screwbalee. So I decided, why don't I explain in greater depth Screwbalee? Because, you know, we're heading towards one. Now, of course, it's a play on the term Jubilee, and Jubilee is the belief, and it's from the Bible, but people believe it today, that at some time in the near future, all debts will be forgiven. And perhaps not because of the largesse of those who run the world, but because, simply put, those debts will never be repaid. And I gotta be honest with you, there was a time several years ago where I thought that's where we were headed. We were gonna head to some kind of jubilee, currency reset, and ultimately all the debts that cannot be paid will not be paid. Essentially a kind of controlled default. In my view, the debt scheme only has two options: controlled default, which is a jubilee, or uncontrolled default, which is inflation, war, chaos, destruction. In my heart of hearts, and that's how much of an idealist I still was a long time ago, I kind of hoped that they'd use common sense and that they would do for the world and at least the American people what they did in Latin America back in the 90s, and that is just write off the debt. Of course, if you know anything about the economic hitman, and I always forget that guy's name, so I'm going to look him up. But there's a fellow who wrote a book called The Economic Hitman, and let's just double-check Google, because there's only one right answer according to Eric Schmidt. Yes, John Perkins, a banker who worked for essentially the deep state. He wrote a book many years ago, I think 2004, called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And so, yeah, you know, there's this fantasy about the 1990s where, you know, the white man and the banker was really decent to the Latin Americans and just wrote off all the debt. But in reality, that's not really what happened. There's never been that kind of largesse. The people that run these systems don't give a fuck about you. If you think about 2008, it was very much a jubilee, but not for us, not for ordinary people. It was a jubilee for the richest and most disgusting, shittiest people that ever lived. The people that essentially run the world, ran the world, and they ran it into a ditch. But worse, they ran it into a ditch filled with landmines. And for their great job of screwing up the economy, of piling bad debt and bad investment on top of each other, they were not punished for the most part. Sure, some low-level scrunkies and Madoff and a few others went to, you know, frickin' let's go play tennis jail, I think. I mean, truly, there are different types of prisons for different types of people. Not everybody goes to the rebar up your butt prison. If you're one of those people that, you know, fucked his neighbor in the banking system, it's as likely as not that you go to some place where you get to play fucking pinochle and learn to play tennis. So the word I would apply to them, you know, is a kind of jubilee, but for the rest of us, it was a screwbilly, which means we were screwed. You know, we were fucked. If we couldn't make our house payments, yeah, fuck you. If you couldn't make your car payment, oh, by the way, fuck you. If you had a hard time paying for medical bills and cancer drugs your kid needed, hey, buddy, fuck you. It's a screwbilly. And here's the thing. I never really believed they could get away with it again. Like, in my heart, I thought, well, they could only really do that once. They can't do it twice in a row, not in a decade or so. They just can't do it. People aren't that stupid. People have memories. People won't forget what happened 10 years ago. But I'm beginning to recognize that not only are people losing their minds and their memories, but yeah, they can do a screwbilly, because even the quote-unquote, you know, the lefty, warm-hearted people, the Anastasio Omega Cortez commie from New York who talks about modern monetary theory bullshit, which is really just a euphemism for printing money, they are all part of the screwbilly. And they're going to convince you that universal basic income and helicopter money, we got to help out the homeowners. Got to help out the homeowners. Sure, 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 that entire dysfunctional home-owning economy is toxic to humanity. There is no fucking way we can all make a living flipping houses to each other, you fucking morons. We're not all going to work part-time at Home Depot and do contracting work on the side. An actual healthy economy has more things going on, it turns out, than just healthcare, building bombs, and flipping houses, and spying on your neighbor. Those are the four legs of the American economic stool. The healthcare economy, the national security state economy, aka TSA, the dropping bombs on people economy, aka the military industrial complex, and of course, the shelter pyramid, the flipping of homes. We're all gonna sell homes to each other until the apocalypse. So I do think another screwbilly is coming, and let me tell you what this looks like. I more or less, and this isn't special, I'm not special, I simply don't have a smartphone, so that helps, but I knew that the quote-unquote rate increases would end. I never thought they would, you know, the Fed rate would get to 3%. It seemed implausible to me, and I turned out to be right. The little hiccup from last December, the anti-Santa Claus rally, that more or less was a wake-up call to our good friend Powell at the Federal Reserve to stop raising rates. So we're roughly in that 250 basis points, which, again, I love how they talk basis points. They used to talk in terms of interest. The reason why they use basis points, because it's a lingo that makes you believe that you're going farther than you're going. It's like, let's say you were walking down the street, but instead of measuring your progress in feet, you measured it in inches. It'd be like, well, I just went 3,000 inches. And it's like, holy fuck, dude, that's amazing. How many feet is that again? So yeah, we're up around that 250 basis point range, and we're done. I think we're done. I think sometime, and this is part of my screwbilly prediction, which I've made in a few other podcasts. I'm not special, I'm not original, but part of my screwbilly prediction is not only will rates not go up more this year, but sometime in the second quarter of 2019, rates are going to start to go down again at the Fed level. The Federal Reserve, under Powell, is going to reduce rates. And maybe he'll do it the same way, by inches, by basis points, and be like, well, we're going to reduce the Fed rate to 200 basis points, and people say, holy crap, that's a whole 50 inches. You know, don't go too hard, man. You're ready for the fucking marathon. But worse than that, I think quantitative easing is going to start up again. It is possible that they do the rate reduction first and they get to zero and perhaps beyond zero, which, wow, that's a good title for a science fiction story. Beyond Zero, the future of the Fed rate. But I do think they're going to start quantitative easing again. But like all forms of addiction. Like all forms of addiction, the last hit's not going to do it for us. We're going to need a real strong fentanyl patch to do it this time. I always forget the name of the economist, realistically the investor, but there's this fellow who's sometimes called Dr. Doom. And let me look up his name because he's a good name. Several years ago, after QE3, Dr. Doom predicted, and let me get his name right. Dr. Doom, where is he? I don't want Victor Doom. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Dr. Doom economics, Dr. Doom. Holy shit. Google's getting really good at the memory hole. Really good at the memory hole there. I mean, that Eric Schmidt, what an asshole. Not Noriel Rubini. He's called Dr. Doom, but he's not the one I'm thinking about. So there's more than one. Oh yeah, Mark Faber. Isn't Google funny? I look for Dr. Doom. I hit the fucking cartoons first. Then I get Rubini, who, you know, supposedly is the wise man of American economics and coined the term, you know, black swan, but he couldn't see a black. You can't see a black swan. And let's be fair, he's right. But I think it's bullshit. These aren't black swans. These weren't make-believe invisible fucking things. But no, you got to scroll a bit to get the Mark Faber. Well, Mark Faber believed several years ago, let's say 5-6 years ago, that if they did quantitative easing 4, QE4, that the Fed would go to $1 trillion a month in bond purchases. And just so you know, I think when QE3 ended, officially, we were around $100 billion to $150 billion in bond purchasing per month. So this would be like a 10 times increase. And I think that that's realistic. Mark Faber, I think, nailed it. You know, a lot like most of us, he probably didn't realize the madness could go on this long. But also, like I said, I didn't think they'd do another screwbally. Well, the screwbally is here. And when I say screwbally, I mean as in S-C-R-E-W, as in you're fucking screwed if you're like me. If you're an ordinary person, the screwbally has, the second screwbally in slightly over a decade has arrived. Okay, really about a decade, the screwbally is here. You will be fucked. If you're an ordinary person, you will be fucked. You will be beaten down. They might even pass laws to prevent you from ever going bankrupt again. Debtor's prison might come back, but you'll get your universal basic income if you're from Mexico, you fuck. But no, if you're an ordinary everyday person like me, especially if you're around the age of 50, and have no kids and don't fit into one of the protected identities, then you're going to get totally fucking screwed. So the screwbally has arrived. Interest rates have topped out at 2.5% Fed rate, right? Roughly. Interest rates will go down. I really do think you could see a major rate cut in the second quarter of this year. Maybe as late as the third quarter, but interest rates will go down. And I think Dr. Doom, Mark Faber, is dead fucking right. I think what's coming is going to be the biggest fucking screwbally ever. If you're a person who works in the home flipping economy, yeah, you'll probably have a couple months of stress, maybe. I mean, it does look like the year-on-year drop in sales or roughly volume sales, whatever, in real estate is in that double digit range already. So yeah, that doesn't look so good. It does look like the subprime market with respect to auto loans is imploding. That's not so cool. But the screwbally is coming, and the screwbally means that there'll be more and more of this magical free money for the richest motherfuckers who ever lived, and that will trickle down to the shelter flippers, the shelter pyramid scheme. It'll filter down to the UAW and what's left of automotive production. It'll filter down to building bombs because you can never have too many micronuclear weapons to vaporize people with. And if the Trump administration is really brilliant in its fire sale, and I mean fire, you know, deliberately, there could be a false flag sometimes towards the end of the year. It's like I said, I don't think I'd be living in New York because these people aren't that fucking creative. And New Yorkers do have huge egos. They do think they're the center of the fucking universe. So yeah, you know, a micro nuke between 5 and 10 kilotons at a port facility is not out of the question. But this is all part of the screwbilly. Now, $1 trillion a month in monetization, that basically means that in terms of current GDP, and I think the numbers are roughly the same, I think they're around that 18 trillion, quote unquote, 18 to 19. Let's double check. Let's see what 2017 GDP was, US GDP. I want to double check. Shouldn't just do the numbers off the top of my head. USA, right. Yeah, 19.3 trillion. yeah, that's make-believe. 19 trillion in GDP in 2017. But what's really funny, I think it was 17 trillion in 2008. Let's check out the 2008 GDP, okay? Just so we know how much fucking progress we've made. Oh, they barely list it. They actually make the font a lot smaller. I wonder why, Eric fucking Schmidt. So in 2008, the US GDP was 14.2 trillion. So if you believe these numbers, and if you pretend it's not all monetary debasement and other types of financial bullshit, then yeah, we've added about 5 trillion, okay, in GDP since 2008. I hate to break it to you, but the official U.S. government debt is $22 trillion. The official, quote-unquote, outstanding treasuries for the Fed is still around $5 trillion, and the unofficial, if you believe people, is bigger. Officially, central banks around the world have, you know, officially created, since the great financial crisis, somewhere around $25 trillion. Unofficially, there is an overhang of derivatives, like a sword of economic Damocles as part of the screwbilly. And the number I've heard, because it's not an official market, so it's a black, it's a really dark market, not a black market. Black markets are bad and illegal. No, the derivatives and credit default swap market, it's a dark market. But I've heard it's between 1 quadrillion and 4 quadrillion, which, if you don't know what a quadrillion is, it's $1,000 trillion. Okay, that's money that will never, ever, ever, ever get paid by the rich and powerful. Some of it will get paid. Will get paid by you if you're just an ordinary fuck like me. But the richest and most powerful people are looking forward to their jubilee coming this year, and the rest of us will have a screwbilly. So essentially, if the GDP is about $20 trillion. And the Federal Reserve creates roughly $1 trillion a month, which is what they're going to do. The next round of QE, it's going to be 5 to 10 times more, or at least 5. They're going to print somewhere between 50% and 100% of U.S. GDP in treasuries. And it's coming, probably before the end of the year. And so if you're a house flipper, and you believe in the Home Depot house flipping economy, if you're a weapons contractor and you think it's awesome to set people's fucking homes on fire, if you're in healthcare and you think the healthcare bubble is sustainable, it's sustainable, Dan. It's sustainable. If you're part of the national security state, and whether you make money as a TSA agent shoving stuff up people's butts at the airport, or you make money arresting people, you know, for whatever stupid fucking crime you've come up with, then the screwbilly will probably be a little bit prosperous for you too. Yeah, you won't get the main parts. You'll get the hind quarters. But the hind quarters will still be juicy for you as you fuck the rest of your neighbors. Now, I say some of this, keep in mind, I know people who work in the government. I know people who are essentially trying to deal with these situations as best they can. I don't think everybody that takes advantage of the screwbilly is a terrible person. It just turns out that when it comes to the screwbilly, there are winners and losers. And if you don't like the term screwbilly, let me use an Austrian economics term. Crack up boom. crack-up booms are really the final outcome of inflation. And let's be blunt about what inflation is. Often we think inflation is the price of food. And yeah, guess what? Inflation with respect to food has been just a tad more than the 1.7% they publish. What a fucking lie. But actually, if you include everything, including assets, which means the stock market, including the price of shelter, which you need, if you know what Maslow's hierarchy is, and you're not a big fan of building pyramids that are lopsided, you should know that the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy is food, water, and, excuse me, shelter. The crack-up boom will be positive for these things, but inflation has been real. But yeah, there's been inflation. It's just they cover it up. Well, this time, I don't think they'll be able to cover up shit. You can only make the cardboard center, the cardboard cylinder on the inside of a roll of toilet paper so big. You can only add so much water to your dishwashing soap before people realize there's more water in the bottle they just bought than soap. You can only debase food so much before everybody's bleeding out of their a-holes and has cancer. There is a limit, but a crack-up boom is the following. It's really the point at which people begin to realize that their money on a day-to-day basis is worth less. So what they end up doing, and this is why it's sometimes economically positive, like people say, holy shit, man, this Weimar Republic is awesome because everyone's got jobs and everyone's making money. It starts out, I don't want to call it innocent, it starts out sort of optimistic. This is how crack-up booms work. And because it's going to come off of this negative and sad behaviors and the little mini trough of the little tiny little housing collapse that people are already complaining about, it's going to be doubly positive. It's like me finding out last week I won't be homeless. It's better than Prozac. So the first phase of a crack-up boom actually looks pretty good to people. You know, it's like, holy shit, the economy's doing great. That's an illusion. The second phase is when people, you know, instead of buying one bottle of wine, they realize if I buy three, I can sell two on eBay. I gotta tell you, that's phase two. Phase two is where you don't just buy one of something, you buy four of something because the price is going up too fast. This is how shortages begin, FYI. If you wanna know one of the sources of a shortage, one of the sources of a shortage is when prices go up so much that people see logically the time value of money, and they say, tomorrow, my money is going to be worth 10% less than today. And when it comes to really bad hyperinflation, that's where it starts. And it might not be tomorrow. It could be on a month-to-month basis. You as a family recognize that this month it cost you $500 to feed your family. Last month it cost $500. This month it cost $600. So you decide, next month, you're going to try to buy 2 months worth of food. This is the process of a crack-up boom. And like I said, the first part of a crack-up boom seems like something good. If you're in the housing industry, and we do have the screwbally, the first 6 months, I don't know how many months we'll get out of it. To me, the screwbally is a lot like attaching nitrous to an old car that has a burnt-out engine. You're only going to apply the nitrous so long before the engine explodes. But yeah, the first, let's say between May of 2019 and May of 2020, or maybe June, so let's say those 12 to 13 months, that first phase of the crack-up boom in the markets, housing market, whatever, is going to be amazing. If you're in the defense industry, you'll say, holy fuck, this is amazing. I've never had so many orders for white phosphorus in my whole fucking life. That's phase one of the crack-up boom. Phase two is when, well, it turns out that you finish the wine at the restaurant, but you're going to take the bottle home because that bottle will be worth more than the money you're going to get paid, or at least some of the money you get paid. That's where things start to head. Phase two is where inflation gets out of control, and people still hope, well, maybe something can be done. I forget the name of the Austrian economist, but there was an Austrian economist who was asked during a currency crisis what should be done. And he asked them to take them down to where they were printing money. And he said, you see those printers? Stop those. Again, if you're an Austrian theoretician, you know the economist I'm talking about. I don't really worry too much about naming this name. But it's funny because essentially what the economist was saying is, if you want to end the inflation, you have to stop printing money. But governments and drug addicts have one thing in common. They don't respond well to restraint. If you tell them to restrain themselves, they're going to tell you to fuck off. So phase two is pretty bad. Phase three is the boom part. And I don't mean boom as in, yay, happy days are here again. No, no, no. It's more like the nitrous and the turbocharger on the four-cylinder engine from the Pinto, Ford Pinto, 1978, that has 600,000 miles on it. That's phase three. That's the end game. That's where the engine explodes. If the screwbally is coming, and I believe the screwbally is coming, then phase three is going to be pretty fucking shitty. It's going to be I don't know. I mean, it's why I think they're going to do a false flag. You know, one of the things they learned about printing money during the Great Depression is there is a way to print money. And they learned this at the end, really. They learned it at the interstitial phase, that sort of boundary between cold and warm water between 1938 and 1941, really between the Depression and World War II. They learned a lesson. You can print a lot of money, and they really learned the lesson in World War II, especially in America. You can print a lot of money as long as you have rationing. The problem is, Americans aren't going to really put up with rationing unless there's a reason. So there's a lot of ways a crack-up boom can end. But one way crack-up booms love to end is with a major war. And so sometime between now and 2022, 2023, the odds of a major war, and I don't mean the war on terror expanded, it just isn't enough. You'd have to do more. You'd have to make it about a national emergency, which is funny because Trump seems to be okay pulling that gun out of his pocket. But yeah, it would have to be big. It would have to be so big that Americans could accept it. You know, we've been so fried on the war on terror nonsense, and I've talked about this before, but it's a lot like people's thyroids getting fried from stress. It's almost as if no amount of stress at this point is going to drive people into the street to say, destroy our enemies, right? So you need something big, and it has to be logarithmically or orders of magnitude. We're talking Richter scale big, which means it can't just be a couple buildings symmetrically collapsing from impacts from big aluminum balloons going a few hundred miles an hour. No, no, no. No, it has to be bigger than jet fuel melting steel. It has to be way bigger than that. And so my guess is sometime in 2022, maybe 2021, perhaps sooner, because again, the screwbally will only last as long as the nitrous can be applied to the engine. And if you've seen the video of nitrous fails, it doesn't take long for nitrous, if you apply it to a worn out engine, to cause the engine to explode. So it's entirely plausible that the entire crack-up boom lasts about 12 months. So if it starts sometime in June of 2019, it could be over by June or July of 2020. And that means either they accept the fact that the world economy collapses, and I just don't mean us. Folks, if you think that somebody has a magical exit clause to this madness, I think you're crazy. For the same reason Germany and Greece became entangled over a really bad set of trade relationships, guess what? China is also entangled with us. So this idea that somehow China and Russia are going to replace the American consumer, it's a nice fantasy. It's a really good fantasy. I know it makes you feel good thinking that Indians in India who are currently drinking Monsanto to commit suicide are going to replace the Walmart shopper. I think that's really wonderful that you believe that fucking nonsense. But the Scroobly to come will be a all-central bank Scroobly. Every single central bank will debase. Okay? No one's going to say, well, it's not going to be like the QE that went around the world, you know, where we handed off to Europe and Europe handed off to Japan and Japan handed off to China. That's how the gimmicks worked towards the latter stages of quantitative easing in 2014 and 2015. No. That's not what's going to happen. It'll be, you know how people talk about synchronized global recovery? This will be synchronized global money printing. It will be a worldwide Scroobly. Everybody's going to get screwed, but mainly poor people, mainly everyday people like us. If you listen to my podcast, you're probably not Kyle Bass. Not that I think he's a bad guy. Frankly, I think Kyle Bass is a pretty intelligent guy. But and he's right on China. Not that he needs a guy like me to say it. But no, the scumbags who've been running the banks, they'll be fine, okay? The people that build weapons will be fine. But people like us, what's left of the middle class, we're going to be fucked. That's what the Scroobly is. And the Scroobly will end one of basically two ways, although there are permutations of these. It will either end in a worldwide, you know, crisis involving war. And I think, to be blunt, these people who keep rebooting Star Wars, they're not that fucking creative. So, yeah, I think that it could very well be World War III. That's how it ends. And that's a great way, if you believe in the broken window theory of producing economic gain, which is in many ways the dark underside of the proper, what's called the proper interpretation, which is Bastiat's broken window, his own broken window thought experiment. You know, Bastiat understood that breaking a window does not cause economic growth. It actually hurts people. But it's funny. It's as if people read Bastiat and then got the wrong fucking idea. But no, it'll be the disaster economics. It's going to be the Scroobly. We are at the beginning of the Scroobly. The Scroobly is going to suck. I have a job interview coming up with a bunch of people who will probably only barely be able to speak English. But if I'm really, really lucky, that'll lead to a second job interview. And if I'm really lucky, I will have a contract working for Microsoft or Amazon or Google, working on shitty teams that write shitty code, so I can afford enough popcorn and beer and weed for the Scroobly. Maybe even a firearm purchased off the black market, because I sure as fuck aren't going to... I'm never going to fucking go to a gun store again. Are you fucking kidding me? That's the Scroobly. So yes, all glorious goodness to Satan and the coming Scroobly. And have a great day and a wonderful fucking year.